out of all the Meraglim, why does Yehoshua merit this name change? So we typically feel that he's Moshe's Talmud. So Moshe's particularly invested, Moshe's particularly worried, Moshe's particularly equipped. Maybe some of the other Meraglim aren't interested in being renamed by Moshe Rabbeinu. Presumably, there's some egotistical thoughts or self-interested thoughts that already exist in their leadership and that erupt or mushroom in this whole debacle of the spies. So Yeshua is a student, and we'd imagine Yeshua is the one that Moshe chooses. There's a medrash that talks about the fact that this is somehow recovery time for Yosef. Yosef was involved in slandering his brothers, Vayotzi Yosef Zibas Amral Avihem, and speaking negatively about his brothers. This is what irked his brothers, and now there's going to be a mass libel against Israel, and there's going to be one member of Yosef's family, Yeshua, from the Shevet of Ephraim, who will correct that injustice and that crime. So there are many reasons that Yeshua is uniquely chosen. But Chassam Sofer cites the Targum Yonasan. And the Targum Yonasan writes, Kad chama Moshe in Visenuse, when Moshe recognizes Yehoshua's humility, Kara Moshe Loshea Barnun Yehoshua. So he adds a name or he changes his name. Now this is a fascinating new slant into this Moshe Yehoshua audience or powwow or meeting. Moshe sends Yehoshua's humility, and therefore he renamed him. Now, in theory, you could understand that one of two ways, that Moshe sends his humility, and therefore he was uniquely able to withstand and uniquely able to defang and to try to oppose the Meraglim. And the Chassam Sofer does talk in that vein. How could the humility serve Yehoshua? And how does that serve him as an asset? How does that brace him against this onslaught of public opinion? But in a very fascinating piece in the Taras Moshe, Chassam Sofer says something and adapt it a little bit. The basic point and the premise of the Chassam Sofer is that sometimes too much humility is counterproductive. And in this context in particular, Moshe was worried that Yehoshua had too much modesty, too much humility, therefore he had to reinforce that sense of identity by naming him Yehoshua. So it's not as if he was trying to exploit, but channel Yehoshua's humility to defeat the Meraglim. Rather, he was trying to transform Yehoshua from an excessively humble person into someone that could potentially confront the Meraglim. Now, how would humility subvert Yehoshua's ability to function and to succeed? So Chassam Sofer talks about a bit of a, I don't want to say picayune, but a bit of a side aspect of the whole story. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu was worried not just about the military preparedness of the population, but also Yesh Ba'etz. And Chazal said, Yesh Ba'etz, are there righteous people whose merit may defend? Obviously, this is a supernatural war. Obviously, this isn't a war of arrows and knives. It's a war of merits and historical deeds to the land of Israel. And people have merits, and Jews don't have a monopoly on righteousness and morality and religious integrity. And maybe there are, Yesh Ba'etz. Now, someone like Yehoshua, so humble, is apt to see himself as inferior to his contemporaries and render overstated or overestimations of other people in Israel. So Yehoshua may come back and feel so modest and so humble and so low that, and he'll be so, the words are escaping me, so I'm a little tired when I'm recording this, but he'll be so almost overwhelmed by his own modesty, and therefore overestimate the level of some of the locals, that he'll report back, this is an inconquerable land. There are just too many great people. There are just too many pious people, exaggerating their own piety based on his own humility. So Moshe senses this danger and tries to empower Yehoshua and provide a greater sense of self-worth and a greater sense of ability so that his evaluations and his scouting reports of some of these individuals in Israel will be balanced and accurate rather than exaggerated and overstated. And that's why he names him Yud-Keh, because the name Yud-Keh, the Chassam Sofer says, suggests the power and the glory of Hashem based on a pasuk in Tehillim, Solu Larochev Baravos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rides the clouds, because Shemo. So Moshe doesn't just choose the Yud because it fits nicely into Hosea. Moshe chooses the Yud because it will help him conjugate this particular name of Hashem, which he hopes to empower Yehoshua and to provide higher self-esteem and self-worth. Of course, to me, the real or the more central issue is to oppose all these leaders and this riot and this mob and to be brave and courageous and take risks and put your neck on the line. You need a sense of worth. It's not a particular concern because of how he'll scout out the locals and whether he'll report back of greater piety or less piety. It's just had a function in this moment of crisis. And it reminds us of that very delicate balance between humility and denial, the myth of self-denial. Humility doesn't mean you deny your own abilities. It means you contextualize them. You understand that they're given by a Kodesh Baruch Hu for a purpose. You see them in proportion to other people's abilities. And somehow we all have to find that balance between our humility and our humble nature and not self-aggrandizing and not projecting and promoting ourselves and not being cocky and self-absorbed and but not denying what we have and what we're gifted with and employing all those talents. I keep saying this, it's the end of the year, so I'm having so many conversations with boys. And one of the boys is actually an Israeli boy. He came over to me, it's not the end of his year, and he said he's struggling with, what was he struggling with? With the issue of his shtadlus versus emunah. On the one hand, he has emunah that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs is latov, and therefore sometimes when he fails, maybe he should just accept that failure because this is the ratzon of Hashem. When he fails, not in terms of averos and mitzvot, when he fails to accomplish something that he had aspired towards. On the other hand, Hashem wants us to take his shtadlus, and where do you draw the line? And my answer to him was that that's part of growth. There are any one of 20 areas of growth in our lives which the one trait, there's no one trait. There's always going to be a mix of Ava and Yira, and Ishtadlus and non-Ishtadlus, and ambition and Tzemech B'chelko, and this is one of them. How do we calibrate between our humility and our ability, between our diminished view of ourselves and not rendering ourselves inadequate or crawling into a fetal position and ignoring our opportunities to render change? And I told him it's just trial and error. He's 21 years old. I said, it's going to take you your entire life, if that. You're always trying to moderate and calibrate and know. I told him yesterday to imagine a toolbox. I don't want him to think he's going to dilute one trait versus the other trait, as if he should dilute his sense of drive because he knows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has everything planned, or dilute his emunah because he knows he also contributes. But I just feel that you have a toolbox in life and you use different tools, even contrasting tools, at different points in your life. So you have that toolbox, and sometimes you need to feel empowerment and sometimes you need to feel absolute humility. And you just need to be versatile enough and emotionally aware enough to know what you're feeling and to assess the situation properly, and it becomes more natural as you become more seasoned in life and to respond with the appropriate tools. So it's a Rav Aaron talked about the dangers of excess humility in one of his articles in By His Light. So it's such a powerful targum, and it's so obvious. And Chassam Sofer applies it in more of a specific context about how Yehoshua will be scouting the locals and reporting about their piety. It obviously resonates with a broader sense of how Yehoshua will be able to oppose this mob of renegade leaders.